This is Aspire, Arch Street Public Radio, broadcasting interviews from our Innovate podcast series. Here's your host, Philip Thomas.
Our guest today is J.C. Bingler, who is the Chief Communications Officer for Ecosia, a B Corporation based out of Germany. J.C. Bingler, welcome to Innovate Podcast.
Hi, thank you very much. It's nice to be here today.
So, J.C., I know you're joining us from Germany. So we'd love for you to tell us a little bit about what Ecosia is and also your personal story on how you got involved with Ecosia.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, in a nutshell, Ecosia is a search engine like any other search engine, like Google or Bing, etc., with one main difference, and that is that we use our revenues to plant trees. This means that 80% of our profits each month go to planting trees in Indonesia, in Madagascar, in Peru, Tanzania, Nicaragua. We add more and more countries and carefully vetted projects every month. So I can't really name them all now because it would take too long. But yeah, that's what Ecosia does. You can use it like any other search engine. There are mobile apps for Android and iOS. And just like you would look something up on Google or another search engine, you can do that on Ecosia and help us plant trees.
Perfect. Now, about your personal story, what drew you towards Ecosia? What's your personal journey and how did it end up with Ecosia right now?
Well, I studied journalism and went into online journalism and marketing, which I enjoyed for quite some time. About 3 to 5 years I spent working in different places in Hamburg, which is also in Germany. I focused on SEO and looked into various parts of online marketing. And I must admit that at some stage, I just felt like it wasn't necessarily for me anymore because I was missing a certain spirit or some kind of purpose and just something that would inspire me beyond just trying to reach out to new advertisers or new users so somebody could make more money. And I was almost about to leave the entire industry just because I felt like I wanted to do something that made me feel good about using my time and talents. So I looked for jobs. I wanted to move abroad and I came across a website where you can look for certain projects, most of them in the social business sector. And I came across Ecosia, which I had already known as a company in the search engine because a friend had recommended it to me a while ago. And I didn't know that they were based in Berlin. And so I thought, well, in Berlin, there are so many people from all over the world. So it's not quite moving outside of Germany, but at least it's a very interesting city. And I really, really loved the idea behind Ecosia back then already. So I applied for the job, I got it. And now 2.5 years later, I'm still there. And I'm really, really glad that I came across the job because it's very fulfilling.
That's wonderful. Now you talk about, if I just want to go into the idea of Ecosia being a search engine, tell us a little bit about how that works, because, you know, when people, you know, power up their browsers, Ecosia is not what comes up. So help us understand how Ecosia specifically works, how it got started, and if I may also ask, what was the original inspiration to develop this project?
Yeah, sure. Those are very interesting and kind of different questions. I will start maybe with how Ecosia works. If you use one of the main browsers or the bigger browsers like Chrome or Safari or Firefox and Explorer, you will be able to install what we call an extension or an add-on, meaning that you can just look for Ecosia in whatever search engine you are up to then using. You can usually just type that into your URL bar. And on our website, you will see a little button that says add to Chrome or add to Safari and so on. And by doing that, you will make sure that Ecosia will from then on be your default search engine, meaning you can use any browser and just look for something, just type it into, you know, the little bar that you see, and you will receive results from Ecosia automatically. Ecosia is based on Bing's technology, meaning that we use Bing's search results as well as the ads that you see. And we have an official partnership with Bing, meaning that we work very closely with them when it comes to improving search experience and the results, etc. And since we are still a rather small team of around 20 people, we are very grateful that we have an experienced partner such as Bing to help us, because with 20 people, you can't really build anything close to being able to compete with, well, the Googles and Bings of this world.
Now, what was the inspiration? I mean, this sounds like such a fantastic idea, but how, if I may ask, you know, perhaps with your founders, how did this project, I know, what was the bright light that went on and that led to the startup and the evolution of this?
Yeah, so our founder, Christian Kroll, who's also from Germany, about 9 years ago, when he finished his business administration studies, he realized that although he was very interested in online business and the opportunities you find there, he knew that he wouldn't want to work in a traditional business or work on a traditional business model, because he was also missing this aspect of being able to give something back to society. So he started traveling, and he traveled to Thailand and India and Nepal. And in Nepal, he got the idea of working on a project that would use the funds or the revenues generated through search, because already back then he knew that a lot of money was to be made through online advertising, especially in the search engine business, and use those revenues to fund local NGO projects in Nepal. And the idea was great, and I think was a really clever approach, but unfortunately the internet connection and electricity situation weren't good enough for the project to be continued. So he continued traveling and went to South America, where he learned a lot about deforestation and the effect deforestation has on the climate, and what deforestation also means for communities living in and around forests and their lives depending on forests, as well as biodiversity, etc. So that's when he basically came up with the idea of connecting the revenues from search with tree planting. Hmm. And that's how Ecosia was born. Right. And that's basically still what the idea is now.
Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, how users find Ecosia. And, you know, is there a specific process by which you market to people, you know, who care about the environment, who care about, you know, the de and reforestation of areas? How do you connect with your users?
Yeah, well, what usually works best, and where we can be in touch with many people directly, is obviously social media, where we either are lucky enough for our existing users to share us, just because they love the idea behind Ecosia so much that they want to share our search engine with their friends or relatives and colleagues, or where we can try to reach out to new users and try to explain the idea behind Ecosia. And once we do get in touch with people, they usually really love the idea. It's rather this first point of contact that is not always very easy to make. Yeah. And especially when people either don't necessarily know what a search engine is and how you can change your search engine, and that you don't have to use the search engine that is pre-installed in your browser, etc., it gets hard to convince them or to explain to them what Ecosia is and why it might be worth a try. Uh-huh. And especially since Google, which is the market leader and which offers an amazing range of products like a search engine, it's really, really hard to compete with that and to tell people, well, there are alternatives, and you can use Google for searches that are maybe a bit more specific or where you need certain results, but for other searches where you feel like more objective results would be fine, you can use Ecosia or another search engine. But to explain that to people takes a bit of time. And we all know that people are very busy, that there are so many interesting and distracting things on Facebook, sure. On Twitter, etc. So it's not always very easy.
Now, how did you end up choosing Bing? I mean, because I also noticed when I searched for you, interestingly, on my Chrome browser, it immediately gave me an option to install you as an extension. So how does that work with Bing? How did you decide on Bing? And then, you know, obviously, in a sense, people are also finding you via Chrome, so you're not necessarily competing on that front. How does it, it sounds complex. Explain to us how this works. And to be honest with you, the only reason I'm asking this question is not so much that you divulge anything that is secret or proprietary, but I really love your model of kind of building on existing infrastructure to serve on what people already use to support a cause that they care about.
Yeah, well, the idea works pretty well, or the this approach has been working well for us so far. On the one hand, because Bing was willing to partner with us, and they have a lot of experience and many years of working in the search industry. And Google does not work with charitable search engines per se, meaning that even if we wanted to work with them, and we've just out of interest, we've asked them every now and then, and the answer has always been no. And Bing is willing to support alternative search approaches or charitable search approaches like ours, which we appreciate a lot because, just like I said earlier, with a team of 20 people, and a couple of years ago, we were about 5 people, you would never be able to build anything that could keep up with people's expectations. So, yeah, that's why it's really awesome to be able to work with a partner like Bing. And when it comes to our extension and whether users install our extension in Chrome or in Firefox or Safari, doesn't really have anything to do with the fact that we are powered by Bing, meaning that even if people, or especially when people install us in Chrome, we are competing with Google.
Yes. Now, you are a B Corporation, or I mean, you have at least a triple bottom line approach. Mm-hmm. So are you funded pretty much all through revenue, or how does this work? I mean, do you have investors who back you? When you created this company, what were the reasons towards the business model that you operate under? I mean, how did you arrive at that?
On the one hand, Christian's initial idea was to use the revenues that are being made in the search market for the approach we're using at the moment, meaning being able to fund projects. It could be tree planting, it could be something else, but using funds from search revenue for a good cause. And that idea kind of already meant that he wanted to be able to finance the whole company and be able to pay office rent and salaries, etc., through the revenues that are being made as part of such a search partnership. That comes with many advantages, and it also comes with a few disadvantages, meaning that, of course, we have to plan sustainably. And if we want to invest in bigger features or, build some kind of a buffer or save for the future, we have to do that gradually and as we go. But it also means that we don't depend on external funding or government grants, which makes us very independent. Mm-hmm. And it also means that we can stay true to ourselves and what we believe in. And so far, it's been working very well, meaning that it's a self-sustaining business model. And we do make a lot of profits that we can use to plant trees. So at the moment, we can invest about $400,000 to $500,000 per month into tree planting and to support the tree planting organizations we work with. And we publish all our business reports on our website, so our users or journalists or whoever's interested can see how much money we make every month, what our monthly costs are, so how much we spend on office rent, salaries, marketing, and so on, and how much goes into tree planting and towards which organization.
This episode is brought to you by Arch Street Press and Better to Speak of It, fostering relationships and results through creativity. Better to Speak of It focuses on core management and personal values in collaboration with Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Carnegie Hall. The book offers specific firsthand experiences from the leaders of key nonprofit, corporate, educational, and cultural institutions, including the Museum of Modern Art and the New York Public Library, as well as major performing artists such as Jesse Norman and Michael Tilson Thomas. Better to Speak of It, available now from Arch Street Press.
Now, your profit and revenue, of course, is generated from ads. Can you speak a little bit about your eco ads and, you know, how do you reach out to them? How do they find you? You know, how does that process work? Because, you know, that's very crucial to your success as an organization.
Absolutely. That's also something that is being handled by Bing, meaning that if you were to book an ad on Ecosia, you would go through the Bing network. So you would buy an ad on Bing, and it would then be distributed across the Bing channels, and it would also be shown on Ecosia. So whenever a user clicks on an ad on Ecosia, we are being paid by Bing's advertisers. But the ads booking and everything that happens on Bing's behalf, which is again with about 20 people working on many different things, it wouldn't be feasible to handle all the sales department and working with the advertisers.
I get. Now, let's talk a bit about the trees and reforestation. Obviously, this is such a global problem. How do you even know where to start?
Well, we have so far we have one colleague who is kind of the scientific backbone of our tree planting approach, and he has a lot of experience when it comes to reforestation, CO2 neutralization, finding new project partners and evaluating them to see if the criteria we have, if those project partners would be able to fulfill them, if the tree planting approaches they use are sustainable, if the communities that are involved in the planting are being compensated fairly, because that's also something that we pay for. So we pay for the planting of a tree and for the fact that somebody will be taking care of that tree. And we want to make sure that the farmers that are employed as part of the projects are being compensated fairly. And yeah, that's what this one colleague that we call him our tree planting officer, that's what he does all day. So he reaches out to new organizations, or they reach out to us, because I think we've started to grow, or we've grown so much over the course of the past few years that people do know that that we fund tree planting efforts. So people reach out to us, and Peter, that's our tree planting officer, he then looks into those organizations and the projects they organize, and he looks into are they based in a biodiversity hotspot? Are they sustainable? Do they treat the communities well? Are the projects maybe even community-based or organized? Will local or native species benefit from the program? Are only native tree and plant species being planted? He looks into all these things and then also evaluates existing programs. So he visits them once a year, and usually one or two people from the communications team, so my colleagues, visit and join him so they can film the planting process, take pictures of trees and of the community members, conduct interviews with the people from the communities to get their point of view and get quotes from them. So yeah, that's what we try to do in order to make sure that the projects we support match our criteria. and also to be able to share the stories and our findings and actual pictures from trees our users have helped us plant with our users.
So obviously, you know, you're dealing with what I would call a global issue with local solutions. So how do these partners find you? And then what's the process that you would use to choose your partners or the criteria that you look for the folks that you believe will be long-term and successful partners for you?
What is crucial, regardless of if an organization consists of two people, for example, there's an organization we work with in Tanzania, which was set up by two brothers, and they do have other community members supporting them, and they work with local schools, etc. But these two people have been responsible for the planting of many million trees. But we also work with organizations that have a bit more experience, like the Jane Goodall Institute in Austria or World Vision, etc. But regardless of the size of an organization or their reputation, having a personal contact and being able to talk to people, get weekly updates, be able to discuss improving processes, etc. That's really what's most important to us. So that's what Peter always makes sure exists as part of a partnership or a potential supporting a project.
Now, could you just give us an example of a couple of your planting partners? I know you just talked about two brothers in Tanzania. Are there a couple of stories that you could tell us about a couple of these partners and what some of their successes have been?
Absolutely. I can maybe start with a project that I visited myself, just because I know most about the people involved in the project. That's the organization we work with in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. To be more precise, the organization is based in Kalimantan, which is the southern part of Borneo. And the organization is called the Mazarang Foundation. And there we, on the one hand, work with local communities and a community leader, so to speak. He grew up in a tiny village in Kalimantan, then studied abroad and returned. And so he is our connection to the villages and to the people involved in the planting projects. And there are two people from the Netherlands, one of them being Willy Smits, who has been part of the tree planting realm for the past 30 years, I would say. So he has a lot of experience when it comes to scaling tree planting programs, as well as saving native species like orangutans and taking that into account. And then there are two of his colleagues who are also involved in the work. So what's it's so interesting about this project, for example, but similar stories apply to the other projects we support, is that by planting trees where usually palm oil multinational organizations would buy land and then engage in monoculture, by planting trees and giving farmers a chance to hold on to their land and plants, sugar palms and mango and lychees and all kinds of nuts and other fruits, which are not quite as destructive as monocultures, especially with palm oil. Yeah, you give people the chance to invest in their own future and to stay on their land and harvest fruits that can be sold on a local level as well as on an international market, especially if it's nuts that can be turned into butter for organic cosmetic products, etc. But you can also help provide a habitat for endangered species, such as orangutans, which are only to be found on Borneo and in that area. And by making sure that you don't cut primary or secondary rainforests down, but that you try to build more of those forests, you also make sure that they will have a home in the future and maybe save the species from dying out entirely. And that's something that those different aspects that are all united in this tree planting project. Those different aspects you would find with most of the tree planting projects we support. So there's always a community aspect. There's a biodiversity aspect. There's the environmental benefits of CO2 neutralization, etc. And that's what's so interesting about all these tree planting programs that we support.
Now, obviously, within when you talk about reforestation, there's always going to be at least a micro effect on local farmers. How do you make sure that doesn't, you know, how is that minimized? In other words, you know, there might be someone who might be making a living collecting firewood, which causes them to be a part of the deforestation problem. How do you kind of make some of these adjustments so that people, you know, are affected in a minimal way?
Yeah, well, what you can do, and that's what we try to do with all of our projects, is offer alternatives and try to turn a healthy forest into a more valuable long-term, but also short and mid-term solution than rather cutting it down to produce firewood or sell the wood on a local market. So, for example, if you look at Burkina Faso or Madagascar, where we are trying to turn dry, barren lands into agroforests where people can, on the one hand, plant trees that will take a couple of years to grow and provide shade, etc. Even after half a year or maybe one planting season, shrubs and herbs and vegetables and fruits will already grow and continue to grow as the whole forest develops, which provides a source of income to the local farmers and which will continue to do so as the forest grows. And by supporting people and local farmers when it comes to that, you offer them an alternative to cutting a forest down right from the beginning. And that's what we try to do. And it usually works quite well. And that's why it's so important to look into what do people need in all of the planting regions we are active in, just because there's no one size fits all approach. So we try to look at what has been happening in the past. What do people usually need? What can we help them with? And what could be a more long-term solution?
According to your website, your goal is to plant 1 billion trees by 2020. So, of course, the question is, how is that coming along? And are there additional goals that you have to kind of stay innovative in the problem you are seeking to address, which is deforestation?
Yeah, well, there are many different aspects to that. On the one hand, well, to answer the first part of the question, it is a very ambitious goal, which we are hopefully kind of on track for, provided we keep growing the way we've grown over the past over the course of the last year, because we've been able to reach many new users at the beginning of the year and kind of quadrupled in size. And if we should be able to keep up with that trend, then we will be able to reach the 1 billion trees. Regardless of that, we want to make sure that even if we didn't reach that goal, that the impact we're having so far is a lasting one, meaning that the communities that are involved in the planting programs at the moment, that they will always benefit from the programs, as well as the local flora and fauna. But the more we grow, the more we will be able to interact with a dedicated community, which we can maybe share insights with or alternatives to maybe also help educate people or show them what kind of impact they can have if they try to avoid palm oil products or maybe not eat meats one day a week or maybe even more than that, or just switch to other social businesses or more environmentally and socially friendly alternatives. So that's the community aspects when it comes to our users and where we hope to be able to inspire people.
Now, tell us a little bit about the volunteers and staff that obviously keep your organization on the cutting edge. How do you recruit and how do you keep them engaged?
Well, when it comes to volunteers, the only people who volunteer for us are really our users who, if we ask them to maybe share Ecosia with their mm-hmm. friends, and to maybe try and introduce Ecosia at their university or organization or the company they work for. Those are the only people that work for us on a volunteer basis. Mm-hmm. Everyone who's part of the core team is paid for what they do, and so are the farmers in the planting sites. So yeah, our biggest asset when it comes to volunteers definitely is the community of users who have also helped us grow to the size that we have nowadays. What we do to keep them motivated and to show them that they are in fact having a huge impact already, even if we are still quite far away from the 1 billion trees. Right. Yeah, we try to share as many tree planting videos and images of trees and the tree planting partners and the animals you can come across in the different tree planting sites as possible, just so they can see that they are already helping us have a huge impact.
One last question. For our listeners, there might be people who really love your story and want to find out more, and there might be others who want to get involved with you. How could such people get involved? What are some of the roles that you might be looking for, and how could they be in contact with you?
I think the easiest thing would probably just to be to look at our website, which is ecosia.org, and from there you can find a link to our info pages. If people have questions, they can just send an email to info@ecosia.org, and I will do my best to answer their questions. But we try to answer as many questions and share open positions, vacancies with Ecosia on our website, and share as many details as possible about our business model and the tree planting programs on ecosia.org or info.ecosia.org. Those are the two URLs people can use to get in touch and find out more about Ecosia.
JC Bingler, it's truly been a pleasure to speak with you, and we're very grateful for all the work that you're doing and Ecosia is doing around the world. So thank you so much for taking time to join us and our listeners at the Innovate Podcast.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and it's been a pleasure for me as well. And I'm very, very grateful for the time you've taken, and I hope that your audience has enjoyed listening.
Thank you for joining us today. Our library of interviews and a range of further resources are available at our website, innovatepodcast.org. Aspire and Innovate are produced in partnership with Ashoka, Innovators for the Public, the Kellogg Fellows Leadership Alliance, the Philadelphia Social Innovations Journal, and by Arch Street Press. For PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.